there's a lot of people who are just comfortable with the way things are, the status quo, and they're happy not to disrupt, to be as least disruptive as possible because they're comfortable, right? And maybe that's because the system's working for them, you know, but that's a very ego, me, selfish sort of view versus, you know, I think leadership is service.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to today's episode of Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And today we're going to be talking about leadership and making a ruckus as a positive disruptor and how we think about the concept of what is school and why does it matter. Joining us today is Danny Bauer, host of Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. So Danny, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Yes, Annalise, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm super excited about our conversation. Let's set a little bit of context for our listeners as we get started. Better Leaders, Better Schools show what is created for ruckus makers in education, those out-of-the-box school leaders making change happen. Launched in 2015, this category-defining podcast in educational leadership has helped over a million leaders level up. And each week, Daniel Bauer has a conversation with leadership expert and invites you to listen in. And he encourages you to turn your commute, chores, or workout into professional development and then go make a ruckus.
Why not? You know, you could have that learning while you're mobile. So
absolutely. Yeah. Well, no sense in just doing it old school, right?
No.
You know, I want to start with this idea of the need to do education so differently. You are a founder. I love talking to founders. My listeners know that I love talking to founders. And I typically will start with, what the heck were you thinking? Because founding anything, it's big, it's audacious, and it's a lot of work. So what were you thinking?
I don't know, right? Like, that's the honest answer. And when I think back, what's wild is, so we're recording on September of 2025. It's 10 years now. Right? September 5th is the origin day. And it's just insane that this show has changed my life. But what I was thinking at the time of when I started it was just scratching my own itch, right? I was an assistant principal in the third largest school district in the nation at the time in Chicago. They offered professional development for their leaders for sure, but that didn't really trickle down to APs. Now, my principal, he was lovely, and he mentored me, you know, when he had time, and would give feedback and that kind of thing, but it just wasn't enough. Plus, I went to this event, the Global Leadership Summit, and from the stage, the host said, you know, when everybody wins, when a leader wins, right, everybody gets better. And it was just like a wake-up call for me in a sense, because I looked at my calendar, Annalise, and was like, what other events do I have? I don't have a coach or a mentor. Yeah, I love to read and learn, but you know, I just felt this weight of responsibility to lift the community up. And so I started the show. I figured if I talk to people like you, right, learn from your stories of success and failure, and most importantly, applied one idea, then I would get better. I just didn't realize doing that in public would change my life. And so the weird thing is, like, I kind of like to plan a little bit, that kind of thing, but I'm not a huge data guy either. I'm kind of an intuition and how things feel kind of guy. And it was just it was the right thing to do. I love to take action. And I also don't hold things really tightly. So if it never like worked, then I would just, like, I kill projects all the time within the community that I've created these days. But, you know, this thing just continues to work. So I just keep showing up. So what was I thinking? I don't know. and I just kind of keep showing up.
I love that. And I think that most of the people that I talk to who are just really, really dedicated to thinking about teaching and learning very differently, like this whole idea of what is school, what are we preparing kids for, what's our purpose, most of these folks are the same. They're like, something has to give, we need to do something differently. So, you know, what if we make a whole collective set of choices and we just roll up our sleeve and create a community of people that are just thinking about things very, very differently. So I appreciate that you went on the journey.
Thank you. You know, and the other day I was just thinking, and maybe it was because I was watching that documentary, Multiple Choice, I was telling you about that Ted Dinnersmith did. But, you know, one of the ideas I was considering is just in education too often, we push for sort of things that are easy to assess and standardize and like the single correct answer when life isn't really like that, right? And this space that you've shown me that is just so beautiful and filled with opportunity and possibility, it doesn't seem like there's a single path here to take.
No, no. And there's on-ramps and off-ramps. And for our listeners, what Danny's referring to is we're actually at the Past Innovation Lab, right? So a rare opportunity to talk to a guest sitting across from each other instead of just on a video screen. And so we started out with just walking through the space to sort of talk about what were we thinking, right? When we took on this crazy idea. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, we wanted to make sure that every kid, two things, right? Every child that walks through our doors, we believe fundamentally is capable of solving the world's greatest problems. Yeah. And if we start with that, then that means that we have to understand that as kids learn and experience, just like Javi that you just met, right. who came to past originally not knowing, you know, what he was going to do later in life, but because he had the ability, to your point, to try so many different things, he found himself. We didn't even have to help him find himself. He did that on his own because he had the opportunity in a space that says, just go try.
Yeah. Well, what you did so well was you created the conditions for that to happen and to create those type of containers and having the right team and environment to support somebody figuring it out, right? That what a gift to give the community. And yeah, and so for me, you know, like tomorrow, I'm going to go talk in Marysville about doing school different and AI and that kind of stuff. But one of the things I'm going to talk about, I'm not an AI expert, right? Like, I don't know. I build stuff for sure. And maybe I could vibe code, but I can't code. But I do know what I bring to the table is a radical curiosity in a mindset that helps me sort of uncover things that we want to explore in education, or at least I think we should explore. And so that's the value I'm bringing to the table, you know, when we go out there tomorrow.
Yeah. And how lucky for them in a sense of just like hearing from other people that are saying we can push the boundaries. We can literally think about the work that we're doing as having no boundaries.
Yeah.
The podcast is called Learning Unboxed for a Reason. I want to talk a little bit about the sort of the ins and the outs, this idea of making ruckus, right? And really the idea around fellowship of learning to lead collaboratively. And so we've got third graders standing right outside. So we can hear them, we can see them. They're adding to the ambiance of our conversation. But part of the work that you do is really around, to your point, you had great leaders, but you weren't getting what you needed. So how do we get leaderships to be great so that all are truly succeeding?
Yeah, to me, I mean, you got to want the support too, right? I think there's a lot of people who are just comfortable with the way things are, the status quo, and they're happy not to disrupt, to be as least disruptive as possible because they're comfortable. Right. And maybe that's because the system's working for them, you know, but that's a very ego, me, selfish sort of view versus, you know, I think leadership is service. And I like to say that you'd probably argue against me on this, but I like to say I have the best job in the world, and I'm sure you think the same thing. But when I take that point of view, you know, I'm really very fortunate because the leaders we support, nobody's forcing them to be there. Right. And some of them are lucky enough to figure out, like, you know, district or federal funding, you know, to use that to support, you know, their development. But many people just say, I need this for me, right? And so when you have a leader who is, like, engaged and they want to grow and they're ready to jump in, what a lucky opportunity that you have. So we're very fortunate in that sense. I'm not sure if I answered your question, but that kind of is like sort of the predisposition, you know, of the leaders that we support is just looking for those that want it.
Right. And I do think that there's something to be said for that on many, many ways, right? We do a lot of work both with leaders and with educators. And one of the things that I will consistently tell those folks is often when we start the work of the work, right, the first question I ask is, what do you care about? what do you, Danny, care about? What do you, Javi, care about? What do you, Annalise, care about? Not in your work world, but you, the human. What matters to you? You know, and oftentimes people will go down the traditional, nothing wrong with it. And I know that everybody loves their family. That's awesome. But there's more to most of us than that. There's some sort of inner thing that drives me, that sparks me, that I'm curious about, that I want to learn about, or that I just love to do. And we really use that as a catalyst to say, okay, what if you could take that thing that you love, that other piece of your identity that's not the one that everybody knows about, you know, you're a father, you're a brother, you're an educator, you're what, right? What if you were to bring that and you make that just part of your sort of core self? You show up with that piece of Danny. How would that change the way you're an educator, the way that you lead, the way you think about or work with kids? What if you lead or teach from your passion? What if that's your the starting point?
It's more than a job then, right? And it could be a calling, but I think you're talking to like a deeper human element, right? And when you're able to figure that, it's sort of like a lightning rod, I would think, where, you know, just so motivating, energizing, exciting, like it's something that you can do infinitely.
The folks that we've worked with over, you know, long periods of time, I can't tell you how many times I've heard this, and you probably have had a similar experience. You know, once our educators or our leaders really, really embrace that we don't have to do it the same way any longer. Yes, we have a set of constraints. We have these things that we have to be accountable for. The system says we still have to do X, Y, or Z. But we can design with those in mind, right? They don't have to be the design. And most of those folks will say over and over again, I'll never go back to doing it the other way.
You see color TV, you know, why go back to black and white, you know?
Yeah, I think similar things like that. And so I do think that those are sort of those interesting journey points, right? When we can really get someone to say, I can recraft everything I'm doing and I can get back to the reason I showed up in this profession to begin with.
I mean, we're back to purpose again, and agency and that motivation. You know, so that's the thing. And the wild part is we know this is true about sort of the human experience and let's call them high performing organizations or whatever, what's good for people. And yet, you know, the system of school will sometimes, yeah, put you in that funnel of the single answer. And this is the only way to do it when it doesn't tap into everything we've been talking about the last 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it's been. You know, it's just crazy.
Well, I'm also curious then. So you've been at this and having these conversations, showing up places this 10 years. So congratulations on making that 10-year mark. It's always fun, right? So I'm curious about the things you've seen. What makes you go, oh my gosh, that's amazing?
At this point, you know, I'm so proud of individual leaders that have just figured it out for themselves. You know, we've been talking about what makes people tick and that kind of thing. And when I talk about like sort of my point of view, this idea that ruckus makers do school different, and it's about making these shifts from old or broken or traditional ways of educating to new, different, and creative ways. I love to say that a shift is a shift. And so I don't evaluate, nobody in our community evaluates, oh, you're going from traditional rows to collaborative learning centers, or, you know, there's a superintendent and we told his story. He saw an abandoned amusement park and purchased it and turned it into a learning laboratory for his community. That's just an incredible story. But the point is, for him, that's what he wanted to do. The other, let's say, leader from traditional to the learning, you know, learning centers, they're all shifts. And so I don't know that I could point to it like a single thing. I can point to individuals, but it's just, that's inspiring every time you see that happen. You know, another way to think about it, one of my favorite experiences in education, I don't know if you've heard this story on the show, but when I was in Chicago, when I started this podcast, I ran the marathon with high school students, right? And I just invited them. I went around to different homerooms and said, who here has ever saved somebody's life? And no hands went up, and that's okay. And then I said, who needs service learning hours to graduate? And all the hands go up. And so our school partnered with a nonprofit that was doing, you know, clean water projects around the world. And we ran as a fundraiser, right? So you get guaranteed entry in the marathon. But over 3 years, you know, just over 100 kids ran that 26.2 mile race and finished. We raised over $25,000 for, you know, clean water. But when I was at the finish line and I see these kids cross and they said, I'll never do that again. It was terrible. But Mr. Bauer, I know now I can do anything. It's that, that's the motivation for me, right? And I see that in leaders we support too. You know, I don't want to say like, oh, it was this thing that's the best. It's that experience that's the best. And when, you know, you were talking about people you support and, oh, I'll never go back to the old way. That's what it's about.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Grab your copy of my new book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, at your favorite bookseller, including Amazon.com. In Hacking School, we'll dive into 5 key strategies to educational transformation that will forever change your classroom.
It is, absolutely. And, you know, and there's this great joy in watching both the adults and the kids thrive in that type of environment that they create. And I think that's the other piece of it, whereas, you know, there's a lot of chatter around education transformation. And the piece of the chatter that I think is frequently missing from the organized chaos that becomes created is this idea tied to agency, right? Because in successful doing things differently, making a ruckus, getting outside of the box, all the participants have an equal role in changing that paradigm because they are empowered and free to do so. It's not just because leadership said you can. It's not just because great educators decide to show up that day and bring their whole authentic selves. And it's not just because the kids are engaged. It's all of these elements and many, many more, right, that are coming to play together solely for the purpose of let's see what's possible. It's that sort of imagine if. So when I hear stories about a superintendent that's going to be bold and go buy an amusement park and turning it into a space of learning, that gives me great joy because I'm thinking about all those incredible kids, just like Javi that we were talking about earlier today, and just watching those kids, just it's incredible. Right. And then we hear, you know, state report cards come out. They were released in Ohio yesterday. So you'll probably hear about that on your journey tomorrow. You know, so all of these more traditional things are happening, and they're happening not just here, they're happening, you know, other parts of the U.S. and around the world. We know that. And yet those are not the things that matter. Right. We're never going to make progress if our kids don't even show up. And they're not showing up because they don't care. That's one of those great myths that's being put out into the world. They don't show up because they can't figure out what it has to do with them.
Well, interesting, you know, anecdote. It's not a full story. I had the pleasure of speaking to 1,000 school leaders in Mombasa, Kenya, right, for an international principals event. And that was just super wild. But, you know, a student panel went before my closing keynote. And what really just like woke me up was that there was this student from Mombasa. She said, I wouldn't use AI if teachers like explain sort of the purpose of the meaning of what we're learning. You know, it seems irrelevant to my life. And so I use AI to make it go fast, you know, just get the busy work, the to-do, the checklist done. You know, for her, that was the thing. And she said, but, right, if there was meaning, if it was tied to my life and showed a curiosity about that and a relevance there, I wouldn't use AI, right? And I don't know the girl, but I took her at her word. And that's an interesting thing. You know, there was a Gallup poll within the last couple of years that showed that 53% of students said they're totally disengaged from school. And I put that out there on social media just because I found it shocking and interesting, right? This is just objective. Like, this is what Gallup, like, this is what they do. So, okay, take them at their word there. And I said, the reason's simple. We're not creating a can't miss experience for school. Well, what was wild was I didn't say anything about how to create the can't miss experience, because I like to say that, you know, there's play it safe principals who sort of like follow the status quo, and everything they learn is, you know, in a book or a manual. If they get better, it's a little bit better, you know, incrementally. And the opposite of play it safe principals are the ruckus makers, obviously. Visitors from the future showing us how education can be, but there's no manual for how education can be. It requires leadership and innovation. And so, you know, just thinking about that and how do you bring that into the school experience, right? So I'm not going to give you the answer how to create a can't miss experience, but the response on social, like, man, teachers were upset. They really were upset. And the way they read it, for some reason, they kept saying, I'm not a clown. I don't run a circus. I'm not Bozo. Shout out to Bozo from my Chicago days. And I'm like, who said you need to do that? And listen, you're limited to how much context you can give on social media. But what I was trying to say is kids are saying they don't like it. They're disengaged. And we're not creating these campus experiences that are relevant. So I don't want to speed it up and use AI just to turn in some slop. You know, I'm a kid who is curious and wants to do the work and be challenged. And I'm not in an environment that's challenging me. You know, they're just asking me to be busy for busyness sake.
Right.
And I'm opting out.
Yeah.
So that's the choice that schools have today, right? Are you going to create that opt in or that opt out experience? And why would you create the opt out experience? That's crazy to me.
It is crazy, but I think sometimes by default, I want to be really mindful here, right? I don't want to say it's easier, but it's easier in some ways, right? If there's a system in play and all I have to do is check a box, but who's that fulfilling for? I guess that's the other thing that I always push on. It's like, okay, yes, you're right. The system is obsolete. My listeners hear me say that all the time, right? It's not broken. It's functioning exactly like it was designed 150 years ago. It's just not relevant anymore, right? So we need to stop trying to fix something that is fix resistant because it's functioning as engineered, right? Go back to our engineering principles. If instead we want to make something so irresistible that every kid wants to opt in, and that as the professionals and the profession of teaching is an incredibly professional and noble pursuit, then to do that, we have to literally rethink, what are we preparing kids for? And what do we see as our prime opportunity in that space? Nobody wants to be bored. Nobody wants to just show up. Nobody wants to have a bunch of stuff handed to them. Yes, it might be simpler because the system says it is, but it's not getting done what we need to have done.
Yeah, that's a scary thing too, is that the way it's engineered and the way it's preparing kids or not preparing them, we should say, right? You're basically preparing kids to be unemployable, you know, I think I'm unemployable, but in a good way, right?
Pretty sure I'm unemployable too.
I'm 100% confident on that one. Yeah, but for, you know, for other kids that don't want to found something necessarily and whatever, they just like, AI is going to be able to do basically what they can do, you know? Yeah, so many people have their head in the sand on that one still.
I definitely think there is some truth to that. You know, I get asked the question all the time, how do you know when it's been successful? You know, and that's a throwaway question. But we collectively get asked that a lot. And, you know, over the years, the thing that I always reflect on when that are the stories like Javi. There's so many kids that are like that. But more importantly, the fact that, you know, there are nights that it's 10 o'clock, it's 11 o'clock, it's 1 in the morning, right? And we have to throw kids out of this place.
Oh, yeah, right.
They are so engrossed and so into what they're doing that we literally have to say,
yeah, go home.
Go home.
Stop learning.
Right?
At least here.
You need to go sleep because you have to be back here at 7:30 in the morning to start this all over again.
Maybe you need cots in here. Have you thought about that?
Oh, my goodness. You know, and so when that sort of scenario was happening, to your point, that it's often the kids cannot wait to be in the place, in the space, doing the thing, meeting the people, having the conversations, engaging in what's going on.
That's how you measure it. You know, you're an outlier. And for me, I mean, there's leaders who continue to show up in our leadership programs, right? I was doing one of my live events and it's something probably a lot of facilitators might do if they have sort of like, yeah, some kind of program and people that are involved are there and some are not involved in that program. But I just wanted to honor leaders I've supported. And I literally didn't, you know, wasn't aware of the answer because I'm not, again, a data person or like looking at all the numbers. But just asking, you know, who's been working in the mastermind for a year, stand up, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, got to 8 years. Cause at that point, you know, it was 8 years that we had been around and there was a number of people, right, that were still standing up. Holy smokes, right? Chris, thank you. We've been working together for 8 years. Yeah. So how do you measure success? People continue to opt in. They continue to enroll and choose themselves, right? You know, you started the show like the master plan and, you know, what were you thinking? And I just said, I continue to show up. So for me, if people aren't opting in, then I'm going to not show up either, right? Because it's something has changed, but that's just not the experience right now. So I do keep showing up.
Yeah. I'm super curious as you think about what you see going on. We've touched on AI a little bit. The world is changing rapidly, rapidly. And there's all kinds of things going on. The world itself, the planet's changing rapidly. The geopolitical situations are changing rapidly. Technology is just running at a pace like unlike anything we've seen before. So when you think about all of those pieces and parts, and you think about how that ultimately translates then into the potential that we have in the education space, what do you see on the horizon that you want people just to think about or be aware of?
You know, it's interesting. There's some leaders that have joined our community and they finally got around to asking the district to fund it. So this is a weird way to answer it, but it just shows sort of like a mental model. And then the district said yes, right? And they were so surprised. And I asked, well you mean you didn't ask that like step one?
Right out of the gate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, no. We had been discussing them joining the community for 2 years and they were never able to figure it out. And then they finally asked the district and the district said yes. So I think, you know, to your point, just thinking about like some of the threads we've been pulling on, you know, I'll never go back to the old way and this kind of stuff. Or my friend Will Parker just wrote a book and I'm so jealous of the content of the book, but the title is great too, which is Whose Permission Are You Waiting For?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So I think that's the opportunity and the potential is just like, if things don't change, there's going to be two types of education experiences that are going to happen. The ones that continue down this path and they're going to see even worse outcomes when it comes to attendance and academic performance and all this kind of stuff. And then there's going to be other people who say, you know, this is what I talk about, do school different, reimagining the school experience within the confines of, you know, a traditional setting, so that we create a campus worth showing up for. I mean, that's the opportunity. So again, I don't have answers. It's sort of just like, that's sort of the path to the Do School Different journey to embark on and see where it takes you. I wish I could say it's this one thing, but it's more the mindset, I think. The interesting thing about it too, not only do people say, I'll never go back to the old way or whatever, typically they get the outcomes that they want, right? Whether it's student performance or fancy blue ribbons or Principal of the Year awards. You know, I was just actually on my way, you know, to your beautiful space. I was speaking to a principal I've worked with for 10 years, Colin. He's out in New Jersey. He's like, hey, we just, you know, won this big distinction award for our culture and our academics and, you know, what are some neat ways that we might celebrate this with the students? So that was the conversation I was having on the way here. But his space isn't teaching to the test, right? Like they're doing school in a different way. And he's a charter, so he has a little bit of leeway, you know, too, in terms of creativity and that kind of thing. But they're getting the outcomes that everybody kind of wants, you know, but they're doing it in a creative path. So that's kind of an interesting thing that's going on there too.
Yeah. And I suspect that, you know, you've got numerous leaders over time that you could tell that very similar sort of story.
I stopped counting.
Yeah, exactly.
So many of them have won awards and distinctions. And I just, yeah, I should count because sometimes like that matters to people. It's just not, it's never a way I've positioned myself or our program. So I just, and again, I'm What I need is, hey, if you're a listener and you're like an operational logistics numbers type of person, I probably could use your help, right?
Fair enough. I want to be super mindful of our time together, but I would be remiss, Danny, if I ended this conversation without asking you about that big, bold, beautiful lie that you told a teacher.
Yeah.
In your youth.
In my youth.
Yes, about why you were tardy.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers.
Why is this experience so transformational to you, Danny?
Yeah, so I'm in my house. I'm waiting to go to high school. I'm a sophomore. And my best friend is Lindsay. Lindsay's a princess, and she's the youngest of three, you know, kids. And the world really revolves around her. And she's also terrible at time. So the high school is not very far away, probably like 15-minute walk, 20-minute walk, you know, shorter bike ride. But I'd rather ride with Lindsay and we'll listen to Nine Inch Nails or Smashing Pumpkins, you know, Nirvana, something like that on the way to school. So she's my ride. So even though I know I'm going to be late, I'm looking at the clock. 8 o'clock, school has started officially. 8:05, Lindsay's still not there. 8:07, she finally arrives, picks me up. You know, we get to campus and I'm in trouble. I mean, she's my ride. I've been late to first period class quite a bit with Mr. Rogers, and I'm knocking on the door and I know I'm going straight to the principal's office. Maybe I'm going to be getting suspended, you know, no more detentions. At this point, I'm going to be in big trouble. So I have to think quick on my feet. And Danny, you're late again. Mr. Rogers, you're right. But this time, Mr. Rogers, it was different. I promise. And on the way to school, Mr. Rogers, I passed by a house. The house was burning, right? Which is already terrible. You got to do something about that. But inside the house were Girl Scouts. What would you do, Mr. Rogers, right? Would you let a whole troop of Girl Scouts burn in a house on fire, or would you jump in and try to save the day? So I went in and I saved all the Girl Scouts. And I don't know if it was that very made up story that I told Mr. Rogers that entertained him because he was laughing like you've been, or the very real do-si-do that I produced, right? Which is, you know, arguably their best cookie. I'm a big peanut butter fan. So I gave him a cookie. I gave him a story, not even a detention. And the lesson that I learned is that it pays to be a great storyteller in that moment. And I've been telling stories ever since, right? The podcast or keynotes and, you know, and now I'm getting into the moth, competitive storytelling. Ironic that you brought this Mr. Rogers story up, because the story that I just told a week ago in Boston scored a 9.0, 9.0, 9.5, and the theme was lies. And in that story, I say, you know, because it's fun to, if you hear what I'm talking about, play safe principles, ruckus makers, I'm always pulling on tension, you know, or status quo and doing school different. And so in that story, I talk about how honest my wife is and how it's a part of her DNA and her culture and all this kind of stuff, which is true. And then I hit the audience that I come from a family of liars, and I talk about that. But it's a really, yeah, fun one.
Super fun. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing that story. I just think that it's so indicative of sort of the journey that you've been on, right? I want to thank you very much, Danny, for making time to be on the show. And for our listeners, please check out Better Leaders, betterschools.com, listen to the podcast, you know, Making Ruckus, and just really, really enjoy the opportunity to connect with Danny and the work that he's doing. We thank you for being here today.
Thanks for the opportunity to chat. Loved it. It was lovely.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.